Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Joel Nelson producing today. Joel, I'm feeling a little thirsty right now, my friend. Been talking for a couple of hours here.
Yeah, that would make two of us, Josh.
I think I could go for a nice refreshing beverage right now. We have neglected the six pack, which I think technically we're supposed to do in the first hour, but this is, I don't normally do this show. In fact, this is, in 8 years here, the first time that I have ever hosted 10 to 2.
Is it really?
Well, sort of. I joined Joe twice at training camp a couple of years ago and did like an hour or two. But the first time that I've ever sat in the big boy chair and taken you through a 10 to 2 show. Hopefully I'm doing okay. Hopefully people aren't, you know, turning off their radios. But I have gotten thirsty here over the last couple of hours, and it's time to dive into the six-pack. I think what we're going to do here, because, hey, look, it's my show today, and I can do what I want, sort of. I think we're going to do three six-pack topics. We're going to have three drinks. Then we're going to talk to our friend Nick Kostos about Odyssey sports betting. And what's a better way to complement sports betting than with a little bit of drinking? So let's get into the six-pack for today, and the six-pack is brought to you by Bet365. Joel and I were mulling these things over when we were getting ready for the show today, and I want to start with college football and the overtime rules. Pitt loses in six overtimes in their bowl game. They started a walk-on, then their fourth-string quarterback, Julian Duggar, a kid from Penn Hills, gets into the game at the end. Played all right. Did some things on the ground. But Pitt ends up losing to Toledo in overtime yesterday. But what I want to focus on more here is college football overtime rules. Joel, I don't like them. I like how it starts. I like that you get the chance to go from the 25-yard line. You get a couple of cracks at it that way. But once we start getting into the, you just start with going for two-point conversions. The point of this was to try to make it end more quickly, but I don't know. I keep watching these games with four, five, six overtimes. I don't think it's really making it go any faster. In fact, that Pitt game yesterday went on for about 11 hours, it felt like. And, I mean, it started at, what, 2 o'clock and ended at, I think, 6:45, somewhere like that, the game ended. That's too long for a college football game. There's too much overtime. There's too much waiting. I would rather them play it out as normal, 25-yard line each team. Then maybe you have to go for two starting after that instead of just kicking extra points. But I don't like the gimmicky the gimmicky two-point conversions to start the, what is it, the third overtime? It starts with that?
I believe so.
I don't like that. Thoughts?
Well, only thing I can think of, maybe you keep that same rule with the two-point conversions, but have teams be at the five-yard line instead of the two-yard line.
Yeah.
I would want to see if there's some sort of, you know, next-gen stat or something, conversion rates whenever a team is at the five-yard line compared to the two. The two, it's almost always pretty automatic. You'd have to have something go horribly wrong or a receiver drop the ball or something to not get it from the two. So I think if you can move that back to the five-yard line, that would be my best guess. So keeping the same format, just change the two-point conversion spot from the two-yard line to the five-yard line.
Hmm. I don't mind that. I don't mind that. I would even potentially go back to like the high school sort of rules. Like they start at the 10-yard line. Maybe you take shots from the 10-yard line. I don't know. But I think the big thing that needs to happen here is that the time allotment between overtimes needs to get a lot faster. On the field, off the field, on the field, off the field. And I would get rid of timeouts. No timeouts once you get to overtime. Done. You get your shots. You don't get to take timeouts. If it's truly about trying to speed these games up and get them over, no more timeout taking. You call your play. You get your play. If they're going to keep it this way, you call your play. You go out there. You run your play. No more timeouts. It just delays things. You're getting guys to go out there. They take a timeout. Then they run a play. Then you have a break. And then you got to switch. And then they come out. Then they take a timeout. Then they run a play. I mean, it's making college football overtime drag on and on and on. And the one thing that college football doesn't need is games getting longer because they're long enough. And you go back, I think it got maybe a little bit better this year. But my goodness, last year, those SEC on CBS games, I mean, if you got a team that plays in the SEC and they're playing CBS for that 3:30 kick, you know you're not free until about 9 o'clock that night. Like you're looking at a solid four and a half hours of football that you got to watch. And I watched a lot of those SEC on CBS games over the years. It's just an all-day affair. Now, I was supposed to go to a Penguins game. There was a 3:30 kickoff a couple of years ago. I was supposed to go to a Penguins game, started at 7:30. And I was like, all right, 3:30 kick, 7:30 puck drop. Maybe I'm there a couple minutes late. No, I got there like the midway through the second period.
Which is probably about somewhere in the 9 o'clock hour.
Yeah. I mean, it's way too long. They got to consolidate that. All right, Joel. Come on, Joel. Come on. Come on. Quicker with the drinks. There we go. All right, six-pack item number two. Keeping it in the college ranks, Jim Larrañaga stepping down at Miami yesterday, the head coach of Miami's men's basketball team. You add him to the list, Boeheim, Krzyzewski, Bennett, Bray. Longtime ACC men's basketball coaches saying see you later over the last couple of years. Roy Williams as well. And this one fueled entirely, it seems like, by, well, performance, I guess, maybe partially plays a role. They have not been good since they made the Final Four 2 years ago. But mostly it sounds like from Larrañaga, there's a lot of NIL at play here, resulting in his decision to walk away from Miami. Larrañaga talking, and I'll play this here for you. This is what Jim Larrañaga said. Yesterday, they had a press conference for him.
I love the game, and I love the university that much. I felt like, okay, there's one thing you got to constantly ask yourself. Are you going to give everything you have the commitment that it deserves? 100% of yourself, physically, mentally, emotionally. But I'm exhausted. I've tried every which way to keep this going. And I know I'm going to be asked a lot of questions, but I want to answer them before I'm even asked. What shocked me beyond belief was after we made it to the Final Four just 18 months ago, the very first time I met with the players, eight of them decided they were going to put their name in the portal and leave. I said, don't you like it yet? No, I love it. I love Miami. It's great. But the opportunity to make money someplace else created a situation that you have to begin to ask yourself as a coach, what is this all about? And the answer is it's become professional.
Nail on the head there from Jim Larrañaga, in my eyes. Now, the other side of this, Joel, of course, will be coaches have had the ability for years to go pursue the best deal possible every single time they're successful. Jim Larrañaga has done that himself. So perhaps there is a little bit of hypocritical commentary going on in that regard. But the one thing I will say is this: college sports in the world that Jim Larrañaga lives in is amateur based. He walked into college sports. He took his job. Mike Krzyzewski took his job. Roy Williams took his job. Tony Bennett took his job, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In a world where they're not talking to agents about getting players. Larrañaga made the comment during that press conference that he had an agent come to him representing a high schooler and said, you can't even talk to this kid unless you're willing to give him $1.1 million. We're not selling school. We're not selling city. We're not selling campus. We're not selling program. We're not selling coach. We're not selling teammates. We're not selling playing opportunity. We're just selling money right now. That's all that there is for so many places in college sports right now. It's just, well, you're offering me 1.1. They're offering 1.2. I love Miami. Miami's great. I love it here. I'm very happy. But they're offering me $100,000 more to go to a place where I'm not going to be happy, but they're offering more money, so I'm going to go to the place that's offering me more money.
Pretty heartbreaking, isn't it?
I mean, look, 2025 is going to become the first year of non-amateur collegiate sports. It is professional now. It has become semi-professional sports, and the money is not exactly aligning in some cases with semi-professional sports. And the kid at Tulane, the quarterback at Tulane threw for 22 touchdowns and 6 interceptions last year. Good year. He had 200 yards, and they accounted for 14 points against Army. Not that Army was a bad team this year, but it's not like he tore up a really good team. He gets $4 million a year to go to Duke. Duke, which is not a good football program. So to me, my worry here is this. We have great coaches leaving in droves right now. And there are some people who will say, well, we don't really care. They've been able to financially benefit at a very high level for a long, long time. And that is very, very true. That said, these coaches are committing, for the most part, their lives to this. They have also worked their lives to get to this point. They have built themselves up from grad assistants, managers, assistant coach, associate coach, head coach at smaller programs, head coach at major. Like they, for the most part, these guys have worked their way up to a point in their lives where they are making tremendous amounts of money. And I'm not saying that we got to get rid of NIL. That's not what I'm saying. I think players should be able to be compensated for their name, image, and likeness. But right now, you have somebody coming to you and saying, you can't even talk to this person and sell your campus, sell your school, sell your program, unless you're willing to write a check right now for $1.1 million. I don't know. Something seems flawed in that if we're talking college athletics to me. And I don't know where it stops. I don't know if it stops. I don't know how it stops at this point. I mean, it's full speed ahead. The train is going downhill. And, you know, unless the government steps in, and that's something that even the AD at Miami said yesterday was, we need the government to step in and do something about this. Unless that happens and there's some sort of cap put on it, it's going to keep getting out of control. And I think everybody working The only people that don't want this to get reined in somehow are these agents that are representing young people who are just trying to take them for what they're worth, essentially. And look, I get it. Like, kids want to get paid. They want to maximize. For some of them, this is the most money that they will ever make in their lives. For many of them, they will never make more money than this in their lives. And I get it. You should be able to cash in on that. But there is a breaking point here where it's going to come crashing down, I fear, if it's not regulated in some sort of comprehensive way. The biggest problem here, though, and the reason that it's gotten this way, and it should have started from the beginning, is the NCAA should have stepped in from the very start and said, we are going to regulate this. We are going to cap this. We are going to control this. We're going to be involved. And instead, the NCAA went the other route. They said, we don't want to be involved in this. And then it became the wild, wild west, and it's become a free-for-all. There's no transparency with any of it, and that's the biggest problem here, is that there is no transparency to what anybody is getting, to what anybody has been promised. And I'm not just talking about this from the collegiate standpoint. I'm talking about this for the athlete standpoint as well. There needs to be more transparency in what's going on here to protect young people from making bad decisions, and to also then protect universities, staff of universities, et cetera, from getting caught up in bad situations as well. Something's got to happen. Joel?
I wonder if the NCAA was just not prepared for how out of control all of this was. And maybe if they knew that this would be the way that it is right now, maybe they would have stepped in.
Which, I mean, sooner. If that's the case, shame on them for not realizing that people are going to be money hungry and try to get after it. I mean, you have to figure that's going to happen. But I do wonder if the thought of name, image, and likeness was like, okay, well, this kid's getting offered, you know, $5,000 to take photos with sunglasses on for their Instagram account. Not, we're going to give this person $8 million to just come play football. They don't have to post anything. They don't have to represent anything. It's just, hey, $8 million, you want to come here and play football? Come here and play football. That's, I don't know. To me, like, that's not name, image, and likeness anymore. That's pay for play. Those are two different things. But I don't know, like, there's two, the water is too muddied in the middle there. And it's gotten to the point now where there's not transparency to it, so nobody is really able to figure out what is going on in any situation. And the thing about Larrañaga is, and I'm not crying for Jim Larrañaga, he's made his money, he left the program, went to a bigger program, whatever. But Jim Larrañaga is a really good coach. Mike Krzyzewski is a really good coach. Roy Williams, Jim Boeheim, Mike Bray, these are all ACC coaches that are really, really good, and they've done really good things for a lot of people. And are we going to start settling for lesser coaches because the great ones are fed up and done with this? I worry about that. And I do worry that the transparency will end up hurting young people in the long run who get caught up with agents or whatever trying to manipulate them. It's why we need good people involved with these collectives and things like that and universities to help. And I think a lot of schools have that in place. But it's a growing process, I think, for everybody right now as well, trying to figure out what is going on when nobody knows what the next day is going to bring in this regard. It's tough. It's really tough. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. You can visit them at southhillskia.net. Well, we made it through two of our beverages in the six-pack, so we're going to have to push that the rest of the four, which that's good. It's, you know, holidays, it's a Friday. We can have four drinks in the last hour of the show.
Don't want to do everything all at once, you know?
Four theoretical drinks. Don't drink four drinks in an hour. Please drink responsibly. But for our sake, in our six-pack of topics, we can hammer out four in the final hour of the show. Because up next, we got to talk a little sports betting with the host of You Better You Bet and Odyssey Sports Betting Insider, Nick Kostos. He'll join us next. Joel, very much an enthusiast of sports betting, so Joel's going to get to run with this a little bit here, and I'll join in. But Nick Kostos joins us next here on the Pomp and Joe Show, Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan, I am Josh Rountree, sitting in for Pomp and for Joe this afternoon. Good to have you along for the ride. Up next, we go out to the line, and we welcome in Nick Kostos, the host of You Better You Bet and Odyssey Sports Betting Insider. Insider calls are presented by BetMGM. Check the latest lines on the BetMGM app. Catch You Better You Bet weekdays 3 to 7 Eastern on the BetQL network, and watch from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on NBC Sports Fast Channel or Peacock. Nick Kostos joins us now. Nick, good to talk to you. How are you, my friend?
What's going on, man? Hope Christmas is great for you. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well, and same to you. All right, let's get into it. Obviously, it's a big week of NFL football. We got games Wednesday. We got games Thursday. We got three games on Saturday, and then obviously the Sunday slate as well. But I want to start individually, Nick, in the NFL MVP race right now. I think it's pretty much come down to a two-man race, Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen. Who's ahead right now, and can that change perhaps in the final week of the season?
Yeah, so I think it's a great question. Josh Allen's ahead right now. He's minus 250, so like a pretty decent-sized favorite. Lamar Jackson plus 160. Worth noting, Allen was a much bigger favorite a couple days ago prior to, you know, the Bills almost losing to the Patriots on Sunday, and then Lamar absolutely nuking the Texans on Christmas Day. So here's kind of how I see it playing out. I think if Allen holds serve, so Buffalo wins the final two games, 10-point favorite at home against the Jets this Sunday, and then at the Patriots in Week 18 where the Bills will be at least a touchdown favorite on the road in that game, and Allen plays well in those games, like has decent statistical games, I think Josh Allen's going to win the award. You know, Lamar's got two already. There seems to be a sense of, you know, regardless of whether Lamar deserves it or not, because Lamar's been better than Josh, it doesn't matter. It feels like people want to give Josh Allen MVP this year. Kind of the way that felt like people wanted to give Travis Hunter the Heisman despite Ashton Jeanty, and I don't care, just saying, despite Ashton Jeanty maybe having better stats, it kind of feels like that. So if the Bills win and Allen plays well, I think Allen wins. But if you get into a spot the next couple of weeks where the Bills lose one of these games, if they lose at home to the Jets on Sunday, like Lamar's the favorite on Monday morning. But again, the Bills are 10-point favorites, right? So now it's, what if the Bills win in the same manner they did last week? Beat the Patriots by three. Let's say they win by three. Josh Allen doesn't have a huge stat game. I think that's where things start to get a little hairy, and this becomes a little bit more than a coin flip. So I deal in terms of probability, right? Like what's the most likely outcome? I think the most likely outcome is the Bills win comfortably the next 2 weeks and Allen wins. But there is definitely still room for Lamar Jackson to win this award.
Nick, it's Joel. I'm curious for your thoughts on Packers-Vikings on Sunday. I'm not sure how I can go against Minnesota. They've won eight in a row, and Green Bay on shorter rest.
Yeah, I think it's like an awesome game, obviously. And I think really kind of like the way that people want to play this game depends on how you view these two teams and the balance of power in the NFC. Because for a while now, I've been operating under the supposition that there are three elite teams in the NFC. The Lions, the Eagles, and the Packers. Which is not meant to be any disrespect to Minnesota, listeners of my show, and I come on the show every Friday. I've been betting the Vikings basically every week. They cover every week. They've been great. I have Kevin O'Connell to win Coach of the Year. Sam Darnold might win Comeback Player of the Year. It's not an anti-Minnesota thing. I just think the Packers are better. I think the Packers are a step above, a tier above. Like, I think Green Bay's ceiling is way higher than Minnesota's. Now, I'm looking at the practice reports from yesterday, guys, for Thursday. Christian Watson, Green Bay's like vertical threat wide receiver. He got hurt on Monday in the win against New Orleans. He has not practiced yet this week. And I'm curious what his practice report is going to be today. If Watson does not play, it eliminates like a huge, huge factor in this Green Bay offense where Watson's downfield presence opens up so much underneath. So I like Green Bay in the game. I want Christian Watson to play in order to make that bet. But I do think the Packers are a step ahead of the Minnesota Vikings this season.
Nick, looking at the NFL slate tomorrow with the three games on the Saturday schedule, the big one I think that Pittsburgh fans will be paying attention to is Broncos, Bengals, Cincinnati still with a chance to get in. When you start diving into that, what are some plays that you like in Broncos, Bengals? What stands out from that matchup between Cincy and Denver?
Yeah, I like the Broncos. Point spreads 3.5, easy bet for me on Denver. I think the Broncos are going to win. And obviously Steelers fans should be rooting for Denver because you want the Bengals knocked out of the playoffs heading into week 18 next week, make it a little bit of an easier game. The Steelers need that definitely with the way the last couple weeks have gone. I've been saying this for a while now. And like since he's to their credit, they have done their part and gotten to this point and have won these games in a row here. Their defense is absolutely atrocious. Like, I don't want, like, that fact to get lost in the wins recently and how good Burrow and the offense have been. The defense is terrible. I think Bo Nix and company are going to carve them up. Since he's going to be without two, like, big players on their defensive line in Hubbard and Rankins, I think this could be an Estime game where Estime has success on the ground, Cortland Sutton down the field. So I really like the Broncos here. +3.5 is a bet for me on Denver. I also think the Broncos will win the game. As far as yardage props go in that game, Chase Brown is basically playing 100% of the snaps for Cincinnati in their backfield since Zach Moss went down. And he's awesome. And we see the Broncos basically every week give up the production to running backs in the passing game. Think Gus Edwards last week. Think Hassan Haskins last week in that Thursday night game. Chase Brown's receiving yards prop sitting at 27.5. I'll go over Chase Brown receiving yards. Give me the Broncos plus the points. And I also think the Broncos will win tomorrow in Cincy.
Nick, the game before that, Denver-Cincinnati game, is Chargers-Patriots. So for the Chargers, if J.K. Dobbins, who's questionable, if he were to play tomorrow, but on limited snaps coming off of injured reserve, would Kamani Vidal at +225 be worth a look for an anytime touchdown?
Well, I love the way you're thinking. That's how I bet anytime touchdowns. When you have like a running back by committee, you bet the guy at the longest odds. Now, I would actually say, and I'll bring this up here just so I can give you a really accurate answer. Instead of Kamani Vidal, like, why don't we bet Hassan Haskins to score a touchdown? If the thought is that, like, Dobbins is coming off of injury and someone can score a touchdown in that backfield, let's see, Vidal is +225, Haskins is +750. Bet Haskins instead, get a better price. And he scored last week. So that would be my recommendation. As far as the game is concerned, we have seen betting interest here on the Patriots throughout the week, which does not make a ton of sense to me. I can be wrong. But obviously a game that the Chargers need to have, trying to make the playoffs. Maybe the thought is that, you know, without Gus Edwards and Dobbins coming off of injury, can the Chargers win by margin? I think they can, and I think they will. I like the Chargers a lot. I think the point spread in the game should be closer to a touchdown. I bet 4. The point spread's still 4.5. If people want to wait, I would wait if you like the Chargers. See if it goes back down to 4. If it doesn't, and it goes up to 5, you lose nothing. Games rarely land 5 in the NFL. So if you like the Chargers, wait to see if it goes down to 4. That is my play in the game. I like the LA Chargers laying it.
Nick, last thing for you. The news coming out today, this afternoon, this morning, I guess, that Kenny Pickett likely will play at quarterback for the Eagles on Sunday, his first start since he was a Pittsburgh Steeler. So there's some interest here locally, I'm guessing, in that Eagles-Cowboys game Sunday. With the news on Pickett, how does that stinks. How does that affect that game between the Eagles and the Cowboys and the betting lines and all that?
Well, it makes me a little sick because I feel like I'm going to have to bet the Eagles at some point, and I don't want to bet on crybaby Kenny Pickett, who cried his way out of Pittsburgh because he didn't want to compete with Russell Wilson, like a real baby, and now he's the backup in Philadelphia, and he's happy there. God bless him, I guess. So here's where we're at now. Eagles are a 7-point favorite. We are expecting Kenny Pickett to play. For people that missed it yesterday, the Cowboys yesterday shut down CeeDee Lamb for the season with his shoulder injury. So no CeeDee Lamb here for Dallas. It matters a lot. Not just because he's awesome, but the downgrade from him to the next best receiver on the Cowboys is significant. This isn't like Cincinnati where like Jamar Chase goes out and you have T. Higgins. This would be, it's like Pittsburgh when George Pickens goes out and here's Van Jefferson. Like it's a huge downgrade here. So my sense is that we will see Dallas get bet a little bit as we approach Sunday. I think the right point spread in the game is 7. So like with Jalen Hurts, like for instance, I make the game like 11 with Jalen Hurts playing. I think the Eagles would be more than a 10-point favorite. So I think going all the way down through 10 down to 7, I think is fair, especially with CeeDee Lamb out. If Dallas gets bet any more and this goes above like below 7, Philly -6.5, immediate bet for me on the Philadelphia Eagles. If the point spread goes up to 7.5, you could tease Philly down from 7.5 to 1.5 in a 6-point teaser. We could talk about some other likes to pair them with if you guys want, but that's how I'm playing the game. It's Eagles or nothing, but I am not looking to lay 7. I would like to lay 6.5 with Philadelphia.
Nick, I do have one more question for you when we start looking longer term right now with the NFL. I'm sure Kansas City is a good betting favorite right now, but they're trying to go for 3 in a row, and that's super rare. Where is like the value pick for a Super Bowl champion if you're looking here with 2 weeks left in the regular season? Who is a team that you're looking at and saying, you know what, there's good value there and they're a team that could really net a lot of return if they can maybe make a run?
Well, value is like an interesting word, right? Because it's almost like you're setting me up and I understand the question. I respect the question. It's like, give us a long shot that you think can win. So let's pick a long shot, right? Okay, Green Bay.
Right.
You bet $100 on Green Bay to win the Super Bowl. You lose $100 because they'll get there and lose to Kansas City. honestly, the valuable bet is Kansas City. Like, I hate to say it, like, Kansas City's the favorite. I don't know. You guys are in Pittsburgh. You watch them on Christmas.
It's that strong. It's that strong for Kansas City right now that it's
okay.
You're wary going anywhere else, essentially.
So let's play it out. I'll ask you guys this question. I don't have to be right. So I'll ask you guys this question. Do you guys think that either Baltimore or Buffalo can go into Kansas City and win?
Yes.
Like, do you think that that's possible?
Yes, I do.
Which team would you say
I think either of them can, but I would actually lean towards Buffalo because I think Josh Allen, his play has just elevated to an even more insane level this year. I'm not saying that that's an easy game, and I don't know that I would probably stay away from betting in this situation on that to happen because it is Mahomes and Reed on that other side. But I do think that both of those teams have a chance to go to Kansas City, given the tight, lower scoring games that they've played this year. I think both of those teams, I would give them a respectable chance to go into Kansas City and win.
So I think your answer to this question will really depend on how you see these things playing out. Does Kansas City get knocked off before the Super Bowl? Who knocks them off? Who do you like to win the AFC? As far as the NFC goes, I think there are three teams that can win the conference. Detroit, Philadelphia, and Green Bay. I don't think Minnesota's upside with Sam Darnold just to win the conference. So, let's say it's Bills-Lions rematch in the Super Bowl. Buffalo obviously got them a couple weeks ago at Detroit. I would love Detroit in that game if they played again. So, Lions would be my thought there. I think if the Packers get there, I think they set up as the perfect Super Bowl loser. Inexperience, get to the Super Bowl, win the NFC, and lose to whoever comes out of the AFC.
Yeah.
I think if Philly gets there, I think that any of these teams in the AFC beat the Eagles. I don't like Buffalo, Baltimore, Kansas City all beat Philly. I don't think Philly's passing offense has the upside to beat any of those teams. So I think I would encourage everybody to play it out in your head. I think it's as easy, and I can be wrong, I think it's as easy as Kansas City beats everybody, and the Chiefs just win in the end. But if you think Kansas City gets tripped up, then I think you play out what the Super Bowl matchups are. And also, people's buckets can be bigger than mine. Maybe people think Minnesota can get there. Maybe people think that, the Steelers in Pittsburgh, maybe, I don't think the Steelers can, but maybe you think the Steelers can get there. Maybe the Texans can get hot. Maybe the Chargers with Justin Herbert and Jim Harbaugh. My teams are AFC, to get to the Super Bowl, Kansas City, and in the NFC, Detroit, Philly, and Green Bay. And then do I think any of those teams can beat the Chiefs? My answer is no, so I would give you Kansas City as the answer.
Gotcha. Nick, appreciate it. Great stuff. As always, thanks for joining us. And appreciate you taking some time, man.
You got it. Happy holidays, everybody. Wishing everyone minimal sweats, winning bets, the absolute very best of luck, and a happy new year.
All right. Thanks so much. That is Nick Kostos, the host of You Better You Bet and Odyssey Sports Betting Insider. Insider calls presented by BetMGM. Go check out all of the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. Bet Kansas City, basically. They're the favorite. They've won it twice. Go with the favorite.
I was just looking. They are plus 175 to just win the AFC.
Wow.
I know.
I was not impressed with them at all this year, even though they were 14-1 coming in. And then they did what they did to the Steelers, and I thought,
are they back to form in December at the right time?
They might be a problem now.
Kind of the opposite of the Steelers, where they're sinking in December. Yep. Did Kansas City just get hot in December?
They showed me something in that game where I thought, damn, they might win this whole thing again. And it's because, honestly, more than anything, they out-scheme everybody. They just find a way at a certain point in a game when they need it, they out-scheme you. It's, and look, a lot of it is Mahomes. Mahomes is great. He makes ridiculous plays. I mean, that flip to the running back, that's stupid. To Pirine, it's stupid. It shouldn't happen, but he does it. But they're the perfect combination of great improvisational quarterback meets unbelievable play caller. And it's just, they're so in sync and they're so on the right page at all times that you just feel hopeless in a way because you know that they are just better than you at scheming football. I don't know that they're more talented than some other teams. I don't know that they're more talented than Baltimore. I don't know that they necessarily have better quarterback play than what the Bills have. Mahomes is great. Josh Allen's going to be the MVP, though. Lamar Jackson's going to finish second, not Patrick Mahomes. But am I betting on either of those guys to beat Mahomes? I wouldn't touch it. I think they could, but I wouldn't touch it. And that's where I get where Nick's coming from right there. If you're looking at, you know, value and long shots to win, and you start thinking, all right, well, but can any of those teams, and Green Bay is the team that comes to mind. You and I talked before the show today. I think Green Bay is really, really good. I think they might be the best team in the NFC, and I think they might make the Super Bowl. But when they get there, do I think Green Bay is going to beat Kansas City? No. Do I think they're going to beat Baltimore? No. Do I think that they're going to beat the Bills? No. And do I think those other teams are going to beat Kansas City? I do, but not enough to bet it. Like, I don't think Kansas City makes the Super Bowl this year. At least I didn't until Wednesday. And then Wednesday has this doubt sort of flooding my system now that maybe they're just going to go do it again. It's not going to be easy, though. Like, I think Buffalo is the team. That's my team to beat right now in the AFC. I know they didn't play well against the Patriots, but I don't know. There's just something about, and their defense has been leaking a little bit here. There's just something about Josh Allen. It feels like he's uber locked in right now, and this could be the year for them.
You're waiting on that like special year from Buffalo, and maybe it's a Josh Allen MVP is what it finally takes for this team to reach that hump and get into the Super Bowl. It sure is looking like it could potentially be that. They just got to win games, and maybe a Josh Allen MVP is going to be that last thing that gets them over the edge.
Fan Hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh trusted and plumbing HVAC provider for over 50 years. Take a quick break. When we come back, we'll dive back into our six-pack, which we have been slowly but surely sipping on here over the last hour. So we'll dive back into that as we head towards the 1 o'clock hour and then get ready for the PM team coming up at 2 o'clock as well. I'm Josh Rountree. I'm in for Pomp and for Joe. This is Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. The 50-minute mark on The Fan is brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep, Route 19 in Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. There has been a reduction of random singing during this show. Not as much singing about Chris Mueller, Malzy. Not as much bird crap on a stick references, not as much. It's just not quite the same, I know, without Joe. But hopefully I'm entertaining you here in, you know, this odd week before New Year's, but after Christmas, where it's kind of like whose line is it anyways, where the points are made up and, you know, nothing really makes sense. What does make sense, though, Joel, is our third six-pack item of the day. Goes down smooth. Netflix numbers out for the NFL Christmas Day games. And they're huge. So the best NBA game of the day, and of course the NBA has been a mainstay on Christmas, and the NFL said, well, we love money, so we're going to get in on this as well, even though the games are on a Wednesday. Best NBA game, Lakers-Warriors drew 7.7 million viewers. Good number. Ravens-Texans, 24.3 million viewers on Netflix. Chiefs Steelers not far behind, 24.1. A combined 48 million viewers between those two football games on Netflix. Now, of course, it was shown locally here on KDKA, but Netflix, they got it right, man. I thought it looked good, Joel. I thought the presentation was solid. It looked like a professional NFL broadcast. There was some uniqueness to it. I do have one criticism of the Steeler game broadcast in particular, but overall, I thought the Netflix product was pretty good, and it seems like fans liked it too. And I think this is what we're staring at here. We're going to get more of this, more and more and more coming for a long time.
they aced it by having Ian Eagle be the play-by-play guy for that game.
They went and they got the like actual NFL play-by-play guys. And his son, I think, did the other game.
That's correct.
But they got people in the booth. They got people on the sidelines who knew what they were doing.
And it felt like watching a legit Steelers versus Chiefs game on the CBS networks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Everyone knows Ian Eagle, and everyone enjoys any Ian Eagle game, football, basketball, you name it. So it felt like a legit broadcast, and there were times where I forgot that it was on Netflix because it was Ian Eagle calling the game, like it was a CBS game.
Yeah, no, it was
Westwood One.
It was really, really good. Ian Eagle is the best play-by-play guy in the business. No ifs, ands, or buts about that. He is the pinnacle of play-by-play guys right now, and you can't argue with me on that. I won't. I will hear no arguments. Ian Eagle is the best. Everybody else is second or worst. The one criticism I do have, Nate Burleson has to be quiet during plays. That game to me was, and I'm not a big, look, I've done play-by-play for a long time. I've worked with people in booths. I'm pretty lenient when it comes to that kind of thing for somebody that has been involved in the industry for a long time and done a lot of play-by-play. But Nate Burleson was ruining that broadcast, and I think somebody eventually popped in his ear and told him to stop because it stopped happening as the game went on. But, you know, Mahomes throws a ball down the field. That pass to Watson early in the game where he hits